Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Recently, the fall of World Championship Wrestling has been heavily discussed following the four-part series Who Killed WCW that just aired on Vice TV. And today we're speaking with someone who was right in the middle of the storm during the final months of WCW, and someone that personally I have wanted to chat with about WCW for a while. She is Lenita Erickson, who is joining us. And Lenita, thank you so much for taking some time. I know this is a very... Even after all these decades, people still have such a curiosity about WCW and its demise.
You know, well, thank you for your interest. And I, myself, you know, I think you were surprised to find out that they had flown me out to do a whole episode of that series. But for reasons that I might guess, it got chopped. And, you know, when I watch it, and I became very good friends with the producers, or like one of the main producers at Vice, you know, and I said, how do you tell the true story when you leave such a gaping hole and you jump from fusion to what happened, you know? And so, yeah, I just sort of chuckled about it. I thought, well, you know, I know Guy Evans did the book but you know, I'll say whatever you want. Just ask questions. I'll fire off.
Yeah, there's a lot to cover here. But yeah, as you had mentioned, you were in fact interviewed for this series. We had one of the directors on, Evan Husney, and while I wasn't aware that they had interviewed you, he had stated he wishes they had two more episodes to properly tackle the series. So I don't know from their perspective how that decision was made, but I can say personally and with other people, you were certainly a figure that I know people wanted to hear from and was the impetus for me reaching out to you.
Well, you know, thank you. And I think so. I mean, it was the whole thing is so still hard. I scratch my head. I'm just like, how the hell did I get there? And, you know, what the hell we turned that into? You know, because wrestling was certainly not a forte that I was interested in being involved in. I really liked the people at Vice. I thought they did a really good job, you know, on the series, except you just can't skip such a big part of why Bischoff and Fusion didn't get it. You know what I mean? So that's where I was disappointed. And I got the excuse that, you know, time constraints in the chopping room, you know, or the, you know, just basically time constraints. And the lead editor did call me and was apologetic, you know, but I also really, you know, I've known Brad Siegel for all these years and I've done business with him for 25 years. And, you know, everything is cutthroat in a sense. And what Jerry, JJ, and I were able to do in such a short period of time, I don't think that was anything they wanted to brag about.
Well, let's take our listeners and viewers back to sort of your entryway into WCW. You mentioned knowing Brad Siegel. That's sort of the bridge into WCW. How do you enter the door at Turner?
Okay, so I did not know Brad Siegel. I had created, at the time it would have been in 1999, I created the first all-female hosted sports television show, like all professional sports, all, you know, ESPN, but with pretty hot chicks that really knew their game. And at the time I was very close with Gene Simmons for 16 years. And he just was such a fan of it. And so I flew off. First we pitched, and Gene actually came with me to Fox Sports in Los Angeles. And the first place we pitched was to Fox Sports, David Hill. Mm-hmm. And David, he loved it. He just, you know, he thought what a great concept. The cast that I had put together was pretty amazing. Sorry, I'm moving around here, so I gotta
all good.
Okay. And And so he had said to me right then and there, he said, you know, you're onto something. Unfortunately, we can't touch it. We just can't touch it. So then Gene said, fine, you're going to fly to New York. And I met with Ebersol at NBC, Sean McManus at CBS, Howard Katz, John Filippelli at ABC. And at the time, MTV had a sports edition as well, sports section. So I pitched out there and they all said the same thing. They just said, you know, Lenita, this is amazing, but we can't touch it. ABC owned ESPN, you know. Mm-hmm. So the day that I landed back from New York, but however, I made lifelong connections when I was there. So Filippelli, this is how the story turns into something, so I'm not trying to be long-winded. But Filippelli really, really showed a strong interest in, he said, his exact words were, if we don't do something to change this, the old boys club is going to squeeze ourselves out of existence. Mm. And he said, you're onto something, just stick with it. So when I landed back in LA, Gene called me and he said, all right, here's the deal. You're going, you know, it was afternoon. And he said, you're going to the Havana Club. You're going to meet the head of Turner, Brad Siegel. And I said, okay, you know, but Turner at that time didn't have Major League Sports, but they had the wrestling. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, whatever, I'll go, you know. And so that was how the whole thing started. And then Brad said, well, would you consider just yourself doing a sideline wrestling show? Sorry, I keep moving. Because I was a bodybuilder, you know, and I looked the part, but I had no desire whatsoever to be in wrestling. And but I said, yeah, you know, so long and short of it, I also had a musical character that I was doing, which was for the Millennium. And it was half human, half cyborg, heavy metal, electronica, you know, hair out to there, down to my knees, and just half metal being, you know. And he loved that. So we kind of negotiated this deal where I would be like a sideline reporter. But because I skydive and bodybuild and all that, I could challenge these tough guys to things that make them uncomfortable. And so then one of them would, you know, the storyline would be that, oh, they'd get pissed off and shove me. And then all of a sudden out of the center of the roof in the arena, I lower down playing heavy metal, right? So that was kind of the general concept. And I thought, not what I was going for, but okay.
Yeah.
You know, and it took us, the better part of 9 months to hammer out our deal. Because he tried to offer me some just ridiculously low amount, you know, I think a starting wrestler's salary. And I just was, and I had one of the best attorneys in the entertainment business. So we got the deal and nothing was really clear about it. He just, you know, I know I had to report to the power plant, sign in, get in there, get all my paperwork done. And then Brad said, just call when you're in there. And that's when everything just, because in the interim, John Filippelli from ABC had stayed, you know, he would call me maybe once a month just to check in and see how I was doing and how things were moving along. And then when he found out I got the deal with Turner, turns out that he and J.J. Dillon go way back. Mm-hmm. So he said, and J.J. was the senior director of marketing at the time when I got there. And so he said, just look him up. Mm-hmm. And so when I did that, it was like they were like slow ants crawling out of the woodwork. Everybody was just staring at me. I didn't know why, but in hindsight, it was because Turner, they were been under a hiring freeze. And all of a sudden I walk in with this big contract. So JJ comes out and he was like, oh my gosh, Brad finally brought somebody in to take this over. And that's how the whole thing, I just kind of sat there silent. And I thought to myself, you know, I'm pretty smart and I'm pretty savvy with business. And I just thought, okay, something's going on here that I'm not privy to, but I'm going to figure it out and I'm going to do it very quickly. And that's exactly what happened. I just started to do, I pulled a spin doctor with JJ at first. And I said, well, let's talk. What do you think I'm here to do? Oh God.
So in essence, like you're coming to the power plant of the belief that I'm going to be the sideline reporter. I'm going to have this on camera role. And yeah, you sort of like, why share any more information than I need to? Let them just interpret my role, however, because the more information I have, the better equipped I might be in this company.
Well, I'll tell you what, when Brad said, do me a favor, just go in, check in at the power plant, tell them they're here, that you're here and you're hired and, you know, all that stuff. Well, the way that they reacted to me, and then one woman said, you mean you're here to apply, but we're not hiring anybody. We're under a hiring freeze right now. She let that slip. And that's when my bells started going off, going, what in the hell's going on here? And then with JJ's. So yes, everything was, honestly, I was going there to be a side, do a sideline show and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But I realized, you know, within the first couple of days that I didn't know why I was there then at that point, other than, you know, I mean, Brad threw me a favor, I guess, gave me a great contract, thought I was really smart. And, you know, we discussed other projects that I already had, you know, been working on. So I don't know. you get asked, Brad. But yeah, so that's when, and within 4 days, I had 12 years of spreadsheets put in front of me.
This is fascinating. And so this is around roughly October 2000-ish that you're starting to go to the power plant?
Yeah. Well, this started the beginning of November is when the information really started. I think I reported at the end of October. So I met JJ then. So yeah, it began immediately, because when JJ pulled me in and it was like so sneaky, he said, come into my office, you know, and he shut the door and he just was like dumbfounded and he's just staring at me and he said, you're here to take over management, aren't you? I mean, that was immediately what he said. I was like, well, okay, I can do that in my head, right? Yeah. And so then that's when I got the lay of the land and I said, why don't you tell me what's going on in your own words from your perspective? Because if they believe that Brad brought me in, then I already know what's going on. But so I put it at them as saying, well, give it to me from your perspective. And they gave it to me.
It seemed, based on what JJ has said in the years, it was trying to get any kind of FaceTime with Brad Siegel. He was a very elusive figure for people in these roles. So did he see you as, here's some link to Brad Siegel, and
absolutely, seeing that,
having that relationship with you gets him to Brad Siegel's ear?
That was, well, it wasn't, he knew he couldn't do it without me, but he knew that I had Brad Siegel's ear. And so when, within the first day and a half is when he brought Jerry Jarrett down from Tennessee, from Nashville. And then our secretive meetings began and they were like, and that's exactly what they told me, you know, no one has contact with Brad Siegel. And I think it was like 11:30 at night and I was, you know, we were meeting in my hotel suite. And I said, I can call him right now. And I did. And he answered and he's like, he was not happy. You know, he just was like, what the hell do you want? And I said, why don't you tell me what, you know, what the hell's going on? And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, okay, well then let me just say this. I'd like a meeting with you. And he said, for what? And I said, cause we want to take over the company. And I think you could hear him from a block away over the phone, you know, and JJ and Jerry were just thrilled. And he said, fine, you know, and he said, what are you doing? And I didn't get into it with him at that point. Like, you know, forget about me. What am I doing? Why did you bring me here? You know, you've just taken me out of the game. I was still shopping my other show. You know, my life is in Los Angeles, was, and now I don't get it. And so that's when, you know, we immediately started structuring our deal and he said, fine, you guys can have, you know, a 45-minute meeting. And that turned into like over 2 hours and we did a phenomenal, I mean, JJ and Jerry, especially, he's the one that brought in the BC group that was willing to go in. And we had, and even Brad said, he called me afterwards. And, you know, when we were all walking out, he was probably about 100 yards behind us. And he said, just so you know, I'm behind you. I can hear everything you're saying. And, you know, we just said, it's all good. And we were very optimistic. We thought for sure that we were going to be in play for taking it over. So then we started, you know, kind of putting our own model of things together very quickly. And And then, you know, at that time, Bischoff had Warburg Pincus as his VC group. Mm-hmm. But from everything that I had learned so quickly, I just, you know, I'm a businesswoman. And I said to Jerry and Jay, I said, you know, there's no way in hell somebody's going to put up that. If they do due diligence, they're going to realize that Bischoff is the problem here, the financial problem. And so Bischoff lost Warburg Pincus, and we put in our bid, and Brad seemed like he was taking it very respectfully and seriously. And that's at the time that went on for like a month. And then, at the same time, I think it was right around the same time when Bischoff was regrouping and trying to deal with Fusion. And, you know, and Badal and Brad were extremely, they'd known each other a long time. And so, Brad called me when he was actually in LA to make the AOL Time Warner merger announcement. Mm-hmm. And he called me and he said, hey, I just want you to know your deal's not going to happen. Bischoff's getting the company. And I started laughing. And I just remember it so clearly. I was at the Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf. And I said, oh, Brad, I said, you know, you're so silly. I said, mark this day, mark this time, mark my words, it's never going to happen. And he was like, whatever, Lenita, I got to go. And that was that. And as God in his infinite, phenomenal being, you know, during my time of shopping the shows, the executive vice president of Fox Sports Net had become a very close friend of mine. They had called and offered me a job. I did Best Damn Sports Show, period, once, and, you know, that kind of stuff. So he called me, this is so serendipitous, you can't even script this. And he said, hey, Lenita, you know, you were down at Turner, weren't you, with WCW? And I said, yes. And he said, do you know who Eric Bischoff is? And I started laughing. I said, yes. And he said, well, he's coming in for a meeting in 20 minutes. So he owns the WCW now, and they want us to take on the programming. And that's what blew everything world apart right there. I said, no, he doesn't. He does not own. He can't secure any financing without programming, because Brad, at the end of the day, Brad did not want wrestling on Turner, period. Even though Nitro and Thunder were the highest weekly ratings, he did not want it. And so I just started laughing. I said, no, he doesn't own it. Here's what's going on. And that's when Greenberg shut him down right there, and then deal over. Everything was done. And Vince had been wanting to buy it, but Viacom, another superstation, was not going to allow Vince to buy on Turner, you know, superstation. And so when Eric's deal fell apart, that's when Brad canceled everything, and Vince bought it.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
And if you can sort of like give us sort of an overview of what the pitch was on behalf of yourself, Jerry Jarrett, and J.J. Dillon. Like, what was the offer, and what do you feel ultimately was the reason that they didn't move forward with that?
I think, thank you for that question, because I know what the offer was, which was $80
million. 80?
Yep. And he has done interviews since then. Now, keep in mind, and I want to do this respectfully as possible, even though right now we are in a business battle. So I don't really care what I say. He's done some squeaky things in business over the years. But
sorry, and who is he you're referring to?
Brad Siegel.
Brad Siegel. Brad, okay, just to yeah. be clear.
Yes. And so the reason that he entertained our offer was, I believe, you know, because as a legitimate president of, he had to consider options. And because of JJ's and Jerry's background and also, you know, he did have a lot of respect for me and my ideas, my business sense, all that kind of stuff. So I think all along, it's my belief. Now, I'm probably in part speaking for him, but I know him pretty well. But in my belief, he never wanted it and he wanted it gone. And I think had he really honored our deal, you know, the only thing we wanted were the time slots. We didn't care about the URLs or anything like that. We, you know, that's all. Yes. I mean, that's all very important, but the time slots were what were golden.
Yes.
And he did not want to carry wrestling. So I think that what he did with Eric, because Eric had such a history in wrestling, that I think Brad was riding the pine with Eric to try to get Eric's deal secured so then he could wipe his hands clean. That's going to be my call on it. Again, I can't speak exactly for him, but if I were, as a business person, if I were to take a read of a room, that would be it.
So it's very interesting because as people are looking back at the at this time period in January, they hold a press conference with Fusion being announced that they will be taking over WCW, but the deal is not finalized yet. And the reporting of Dave Meltzer at the time is that the day that this press conference happens, he gets a call from somebody in WWF headquarters that Stu Snyder, who is the president of WWF, is telling people he is not getting this company. You also had the belief Eric is not getting this company.
Yes, I knew Eric would not get it.
Why did you feel that it was such a guarantee that this deal was not going to get finalized in
because any VC group that did due diligence, if you look at the history of what Bischoff did to that company for his own ego, I mean, he captured lightning in a bottle. He sold the farm for himself and Hulk Terry. And I mean, I can tell you, Brad called me when all this, you know, the breakup of it all was going down. You know, Brad was in depositions like crazy, and he had a 6-hour deposition with Terry and his lawyers. And he called me up and he said, "Lunita, you were the most talked about thing in the whole dang deposition." And I said, "You know why? Because I exposed what Bischoff and Hulk were doing. You know, nobody else would talk about it." And it was so blatant. It was like, okay, why don't you guys just share a pair of pants already? It just, and anybody, I know business, and anybody truly that was doing due diligence. Now, had Eric been able to secure that time slot at Fox, he'd have gotten it. Fusion would have done it. And I do believe that Brad would have allowed Fusion to buy it before Vince. But again, that's part of the story. That's only mine. That was a phone call from George Greenberg to me that killed it for Eric. And I wasn't out. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I was just going to say, without that phone call, do you think that meeting goes dramatically different for Eric Bischoff at Fox?
Yes. And you know why? I said this. So, and I think I watched when Bischoff and whoever his manager, whatever, on YouTube, they did like Bischoff shoots off on Lenita Erickson, you know, and it was this 13-minute long diatribe about me. And because I had said, you know, I remember the day Gene called me up when I was my deal at Turner was not yet completely secured, but we knew it was going to be. It was just a matter of money at that time and coming to an agreement. And so Gene called me up because Bischoff was in Los Angeles and he said, "What, you know, you need to go down to CAA. Eric's going to be there with, you know, so-and-so. And I want you guys to meet before you go, you know, to Atlanta." And so I said, "Cool, you know." So I went down to CAA. I'm in the office and he comes in. By the way, pardon this filth. I've been riding horses all morning. I smell worse than I look. But so he comes in and immediately, you know, and I've been in rock and roll. I've been in Hollywood for so long. And you can see a schmarmy schmooze. You know, I can smell a skunk and hear a rattler from a mile away. And he comes in, he's like, "Oh, what an honor to meet such an amazing woman like you." I mean, it was just overkill, right? So I, and I'm kind of an ass, you know, and I, not an ass, I don't mean to be, but I'm just very direct. And I just said, how do you know I'm amazing? You just walked in the room, you know, and it stunned him a little bit. He's like, well, and then he tried to chime, well, if Gene thinks you're great, then you must be amazing. And I said, okay, we'll roll with that one then. But I just remember from the beginning. And then when I watched, because I never spent a lot of time with him. I think I saw him once while I was in Atlanta I think it was at Thunder. And, but when I watched the series, I was like, oh gosh, was I right? You know, and God, I mean, look, God bless him. You know, it's an industry that I understood immediately because I've been in rock and roll forever. And let's face it, you know, there's a lot of similarity there, but, it's not an easy one. And, you know, he did what he did. You know, it was really great for a long time. And then, but his deals really, I mean, in my opinion, really are what killed. I mean, nobody had, the stories went bad because no wrestlers were on incentive clauses on their contracts. You know, they were on guaranteed contracts. Mm-hmm. Half the time they didn't show up or they'd take a, you know, it just, and I know because when I was there, when I first got there, before I could tell anybody, you know, before anybody knew what was going on, because I was a bodybuilder, so I would go work out with the guys in the power plant all the time. Just lift right alongside of them, run. Sarge would train me like, you know, hardcore on the, you know, not wrestling techniques or anything like that, but just bodybuilding and training. And, you know, Sarge used to bitch about it. He would say, it's not like it used to be, you know. And I was careful because I was obviously pumping for info, you know. And like I said, at that time, they didn't know who I was dealing with or what was going on. But they knew that Brad brought me in. So I think everybody was sort of, you know, kind of like wondering, like, why is she here and who is she and what's really going on kind of thing. Even Brad didn't know what was really going on. So
you had mentioned earlier the name of this this financier for Fusion that was called Warburg Pincus, and they famously, like, they were going to be putting up a lot of the capital, and then as the reporting went, once they kind of started to look at the books, they were pretty scared off. And I have to imagine you had quite a leg up, because as you're mentioning, 4 days in at the power plant, you're seeing 12 years of financials.
12 years of spreadsheets. I mean, we laid out like, and you know, again, and Jerry and JJ were, we were so symbiotic, the three of us, because, you know, they understood that I understood business. I understood what this meant. And so there was no like trying to explain to me or this or that, you know, it's like, I got it. Let's keep rolling. Here's, you know, so yeah, 12 years and 4 days.
And how late in the game are the three of you still working to try and get the company? And was the loss of the TV time slots, was that enough
for
the three of you to just, we're out?
That's it. Absolutely. That's when Jerry, because Jerry had, it was Trinity Capital out of Boston. And Jerry, that was all set up through Jerry. And yeah, that was it. Without the time slots, it was not worth anything to us. And then afterwards, you know, and I had no desire to be in the wrestling world. I mean, while I was there, you know, it's like anything else. If you want to do something, you want to be really good at it. And so, you know, the premise was supposed to be that if we got the company, I would be the first female, you know, in public to run a federation against like Vince, you know, because I mean, I've been on stage, I've been a performer my life, and I was a bodybuilder. So it made sense. And to that part, I took it very seriously. And I, you know, started thinking, okay, let's plan for this, or let's, you know, kind of do like revamp, you know, directions and this kind of thing, what we're thinking. But yeah, as soon as that, the time slots got pulled, that was it.
Is there ever like a moment, like, you're obviously deep in planning with Jerry Jarrett and JJ Dillon. Like, do you at any point like share with JJ, you know, when I came to the power plant, like I was coming in for a totally different role? Or did you just figure the less they know, the better? And you seem incredibly savvy to just understand what you were walking into and just sort of riding the wave.
I did. And, you know, in all fairness, you know, the fact that everybody knew that I was partnered up with Gene Simmons, and he's obviously respected as a very brilliant businessman outside of KISS. And the fact that John Filippelli and JJ go way back, and, you know, Flip left ABC and then went on to become the head of Yes Network, which is actually where Sue Snyder, no, was it Snyder or Badal? Some, or, no, Harry, whatever his name, he ended up going to work for Flip. So everybody around there was going, wait a minute, this is not your daddy's Oldsmobile. So something's going on here. And so I just kind of left it at that. I think that was enough for them to just take me pretty seriously. And the fact that, you know, I knew what I was talking about, it never came up. We never discussed it. And no, to me, I did not want to do that because I felt like that would be kind of going, ha ha. And I respected both of them way too much. You know, I really enjoyed working the short period of time working with them. And I found them both to be quite brilliant at what they do. And I was so sorry to hear. I did not know until this Vice series that JJ had passed. I mean, Jared. I did not know that, but, yeah, they were wonderful. And like I said, I didn't want to, make it seem like thumbs up, you know, ha ha. So no, I never said anything.
You mentioned Brad Siegel. You felt like just at his core, he did not want wrestling on the network.
I know. Listen, like I said, I've done business with him. I had other deals on the table. He was interested in some of my other projects, you know, because I do produce and create stuff. And, you know, there were times where if he was in LA, we would have a meeting. And he just said all the time, he did not want, no. And even after all of that, you know, after all, you know, this is probably, well, I can tell you when this conversation happened because, he is a hardcore liberal and I am a hardcore Trump. Okay. And not to get political or anything, but this was back in 2016 and we were having dinner in LA discussing some stuff. And this is when Hillary just got done calling all of us Trumpers basket of deplorables. Uh-huh. And I said, you know, I'm a Trumper. He said, yeah, I know. I said, so does that mean I'm a deplorable? And he said, if you like Trump, and he said, that's why you liked wrestling. And I went, wow. I got up, I put the napkin down and grabbed my purse and got off the table and said, you enjoy the rest of your dinner. And I left.
So I guess you two might not be reconnecting over the next couple of months before November.
Oh, we had been. That was in 16. Yeah, we had been. I just did a business deal with him, 8 months ago. And, right now we're in an argumentative state regarding sort of the fine nuances of the deal. He's, you know, in midway, he's tried to change part of the deal, which I said, no. And
we should get him on and I can be mediator and we can get the Lenita Erickson, Brad Siegel, the round table.
Yes, please. No, I mean, I'm not trying to trash talk him. He's a brilliant guy. He's obviously, we've been friends for 25 years. You know, I don't agree with him much of the time on, his taste. He's very, again, and I'm just being honest right now. I'm not trying to get political, but you know, I am pro Trump. I am pro America. I am, you know, woke can stop already. I mean, yes, fairness is so important, but enough, you know, he runs by some with his new studios. He'll send me some new projects and he'll say, what do you think of this cast? And I'm like, well, where's the 6 foot blue eyed big blonde? Cause they're all, you know, it's just part of the woke thing. He's very much a part of, so whatever, but I respect him tremendously. I can go nose to nose with him on a business deal and call him out when he's you know, trying to screw me over, and that's just not going to happen. So
I did want to cover just sort of the final couple of the final month, really, because March of 2001 is when Jamie Kellner comes into the picture to oversee all of the various networks, including TNT and TBS. Did you know a lot about Jamie Kellner and his role historically, that he has been kind of assigned the guy who made the ultimate call? What was the reaction like at that time? And do you feel that history has been fair to Jamie Kellner and his role in all of this?
I think history has been fair, yes. And I know that Brad and Jamie were very much on the same page. And I believe Jamie's actually, I think he became involved with Brad's new network after Brad left Turner, which was Gospel Music Channel, which became Up Entertainment. They were very much on the same page. So it's not hard to understand. Look, you know, if you sat down with Brad for 5 minutes, you'd go, okay, Ivy League East Coaster. Put him in the middle of a bunch of wrestlers, not his comfort zone. Doesn't matter, you know, and I would argue with him all the time. I'm like, but these are your biggest ratings. Like, how do you shun ratings? And he said, because we can do well enough with something else. He didn't like the stigma. And I think
that was it. Regardless of if it was profitable or not, whether we own the company or we sell it, it was just the prestige factor he felt wrestling didn't bring to the network.
Yes, absolutely. That I can say without question. I mean, and again, I'm not trying to speak for him, but he has said it out loud to me so many times. He just did not want the stigma. Yeah.
Knowing him to the degree that you do, did you feel he came across as honest in the series in terms of his involvement? Like he was pretty featured throughout the four episodes.
He was very featured, and he got really pissed off when because after they flew me out, and they vice treated me so well, I got to tell you. And I filmed for 6 hours.
Wow.
And during my filming, they showed me parts of Brad's interviews where he's talking about me. And they didn't put that into the series either. You see where I'm connecting dots here? Right. Why? Because, like I said, the lead producer had Vice. She's not the lead editor, but she was just stunned that they cut my piece out. But they had shown me and wanted my reaction on camera about some of the things that Brad was saying, you know, about me. And I said, no. I said, for the most part, you know, I was agreeing with them. I said, no, that's true. Until he said, I don't really remember. I just know my friend Gene Simmons called and said he had a friend who wanted to be a wrestler. And I said, no. First of all, Gene Simmons was never friends with him. And that was never how this started out. And so Brad was livid. He said, how did you see that footage? I said, because they wanted me to comment on it. You know, we're filming a documentary. I have to react to something. And he was livid, and he called Vice up and called the lead editor up. And he's
Brad,
like, look,
who called?
Brad Siegel did all this. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So my guess is there's a reason that my stuff got chopped, because it's not, you know, what guy who is legendary at being heads of networks wants to admit that a girl, you know, came in and toppled his deal. And it was not my intention. That was not, you know, that was not our intention, but, you know, so doesn't surprise me. And I thought, you know, he came off as very abrasive, very snooty, which is kind of who he is. He did not like the wrestlers. He just doesn't like wrestling. He thinks it's lower level, you know, and he really doesn't. I'm not speaking for him, because, again, he doesn't really make bones about that. You know, he has said it before. So, yeah.
And what's your belief of how Vince McMahon and the WWF ultimately get WCW? Was it a case of once the time slots were gone, it didn't make sense for anyone else? And do you give it any credence that they were always lurking under the surface of?
Oh, they were always lurking. Oh my goodness. They were always lurking. So that was the third player in the deal between us Eric and Vince was the underlying part, which is why I'm sure Brad gave up the programming handily. You know, I don't think we ever stood a chance, in all honesty, not meaning that we were being disrespected, but I think that the history with Eric made more sense for Brad to give credence to, and obviously Vince. And so when Eric could not find other programming, then it actually, I think Brad was like, phew. And yeah, Vince was able to come right in and get it.
Because by dropping the programming, it eliminates this issue with Viacom that didn't want them to go forward, and it makes it easy. I find it astounding that you are stating you guys had an $80 million offer. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you can look at the final price for this, and it's just like, it's a fraction. We're talking.
After we were done, I didn't even, what did it sell for? I don't even know.
The announced price was like $2.5 million. I think when all was said and done, it was around $4.3 million was around. They committed to advertising and stuff that they just between their first pay-per-view, all the DVDs, the tape library that they got out of it. I mean, it was an astounding amount for them to purchase the company for when you're stating you guys had commitments for like an $80 million offer.
Yeah. Yep. Well, such is business, right? You know, because again, like I said, for us, without the time slot, we would have never made that kind of an offer. You know, the URLs are all that Vince bought. He bought up the contracts, the URLs, you know? And so for them, you know, it becomes, you know, I don't mean this in the wrong way, but it becomes a monopoly on wrestling. So then they could create whatever they wanted. So, you know, I didn't realize it went for pennies though.
Oh, jeez, it was, I mean, that was, I think the source of as they delved into in the final episode was, the fact that Brad Siegel and Stu Snyder, who was the president of WWE, had this existing relationship together, was there, you know, were the two somewhat conspiring here. And as you can see in the episode, they were denying that there was anything untoward regarding
bullshit.
This deal.
We all know it. Come on. That's bullshit. You know, of course, I mean, they've known each other a long time. There's no doubt. And I'm sure that even Brad, well, no, that would be me speaking for him. I can't. Okay, scratch that one. I don't believe that they didn't have contacts and sort of a working plan at all.
You feel WWF sort of had the inside track during this entire process to end up with the company?
Yeah. And then after this was all done, JJ and Jerry were starting a new wrestling thing. What the hell was it called?
TNA.
TNA. Is that what it was? So they contacted me and said, would you like to come and be the head of that? I'm like, God, no. No, thank you for asking, but no.
You had your fill of professional wrestling.
Well, like I said, and I did, I mean, I wish they would have aired some of the stuff I said during my interview on Who Killed, because I have mad, mad respect for wrestlers. What they put their bodies through, I mean, I watched them day in and day out at the power plant in the beginning there. And they're like, come here, Lenita, you want to learn how to come and do a back bump? And I'm like, no. No, I do not, thank you. But, I mean, they're athletes. And they're scripted athletes. They're actors. I find them absolutely, I have utmost respect. You know, I really do. I mean, give me a break already. That is some serious talent and athleticism.
I won't keep you too much longer here, but a question that comes to mind is, you kind of swooping into this industry without having a history in professional wrestling, did you feel that was a great attribute in that you could somewhat see the forest from the trees? You weren't so dyed. You weren't in the wrestling bubble, for lack of a better term, that you kind of could see the larger picture. And just from your description, I mean, you're thrown here into the power plant, and it seemed like you understood, like, it's like, I'm on a game of Survivor here, and I better quickly find my allies and what the real game is here, because it's not being in front of the camera. It's all the turmoil going on behind the scenes. And where do I fit in?
Well, you know, I mean, again, I've been in rock and roll. I've been, you know, on tour for 30 years of my life, you know, in rock. And so nothing makes me uncomfortable. And I, like I said, in good business, you can read a room in a minute. And so I didn't, because I was in such incredible physical shape, they automatically respected me. It didn't matter, you know, because that's when you're in the gym all the time, that's what you think about. Those are the things you notice. You know,
yeah.
So no, and I really, it didn't take, you know, it doesn't take long to figure out any kind of the dramas or anything like that. You know, it was just a matter of a couple days study on give me the rank and file, let me do my homework, you know, and that was kind of it. And I'm really glad that I was not that familiar with them. And I liked, like, even when I traveled with Nitro and Thunder, you know, and I was behind the scenes there and kind of all dressed up, and everybody, I remember Nash walking through the runway at one time, and he goes, "Ah, yeah, my job in your hands now." And I just kept walking, and I said, "I don't know, maybe." I just kept walking, and so everybody didn't know what to think of me. They just looked, you know, and, you know, same thing even with the girls, you know. That's when Tori and Stacey Keebler and everybody were there, and I'd go into the locker room and just say, "Hey, ladies, you know, you guys look great." And they were all kind of like, "Okay, exactly who are you?" They didn't say it, but you knew what they were thinking. So yeah, that I didn't, it none of that intimidated me. It just was really, I just, you know, it's truly, like, as I said, I watched them all, and I'm like, "You guys are nuts, man. This is amazing what you kids can do." You know? So that was kind of it.
How long did your deal with WCW end up lasting? Like, you signed in the fall of 2000. I mean, how long does that go for?
Well, I was on a guaranteed 1 year. Okay. But as soon as the deal fell apart, I got paid out on the rest of my contract for the year.
And they paid me off in full, which was great. And, but, you know, again, I mean, no regrets or anything like that. You know,
it was an amazing experience, and it's a great business deal in a sense. But, you know, even to this day, Brad's like, "I don't know why you bitched about that." You know, I said, "Because I don't," he said, "I gave you a guaranteed contract." I said, "Do you not get that's what killed the company? Everybody was giving away guaranteed contracts." And he said, "You know what I mean. You know, you were, there were other things we could have created and done." And I said, "Well, you took me out of my game, you know, and for me, that was worth that year's salary." And so no harm, no foul. Learned a lot. Tired. I mean, I traveled 3 days a week between Atlanta, back to my house, back to Atlanta, back to my house, you know. So it was, but it was good.
Last thing I'll leave you with here. We'll play a game of what if those time slots don't get eliminated from TNT and TBS, where does WCW land? And do you ever find yourself playing the what if game going back to that period? Or is it sort of a chapter that's closed in your history?
I don't play the what if game. I can answer that very quickly, though. If those time slots were still in play, we would have fought like hell for the company. Period. Because, again, the thing we had going for us that Bischoff did not have going for him were the facts. And again, investment, you know, VC, everything, you do due diligence and you find out why the company's that deeply in the red. And it all starts to point to one person, you know, I mean, collectively, obviously it's more than that, but really it was on Bischoff's shoulders, the way he ran things. And so I believe that had those time slots stayed in play, we would have had the company. And do I look back and wonder what if, you know, no, that's, I don't, because it's not. So why bother?
Yeah, well, it's a really fascinating topic because I think it overall, it hurt the industry greatly, and especially the talent having one less option when WCW went away. And it, I think just overall it harmed the performers for, you know, realistically almost two decades until you had a serious, like, national competitor come around and get back.
And that's AEW. You're talking about Jericho. Yeah. That here's another irony. I mean, my days of touring, like I was based out of Winnipeg, Canada, Jericho used to come and watch my band all the time.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I'm happy to see that. And yes, you are correct. And, you know, I was so sad to find out when we were doing the Vice program. There was a guy, he was new when I was there, and he had just come in to the power plant, gotten under contract, named Sean O'Hara.
Yeah.
And I, you know, in my business sense, I just kept looking, watching him slowly and going, this guy's going to be a megastar. He was that guy. I mean, he was tall, but he could, he was fearless, and he could flip like you couldn't believe off the tops of the ropes and just nuts. And he was just a nice guy and seemed like, wow, his future was so bright. And then to find out that he took his own life a couple years ago, it was like, I was so sad by that, saddened by that. It was, you know, but a lot of these wrestlers, you know, it's same thing in the bodybuilding world. It's like it. Mm-hmm. They give it their all, and that's what it is. You know, it's the one dimension for the most, you know. And if that doesn't work out, well, then what, you know? A lot of great talent was left out there. And I'm sure a lot of them did go to Japan and, you know, and wrestle in those leagues and stuff. But it could have been, you know, it should be. And I don't know. You can tell me, how are the AEW ratings? Are they good?
I mean, they're doing very good numbers, especially their Wednesday program. It's typically one of like the highest ranks. Like sometimes they are first for the night on cable. Their domestic television deal is up at the end of this year. So this is really crunch time for them to hopefully land a really big deal for them that will get them.
What network are they on?
They're on TBS and TNT. So they are
on Turner. Okay.
With Warner Brothers Discovery. So this is a very pivotal year for them.
Wow. Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, I wish them all the best. And watching this whole series, you know, and seeing a lot of those guys, it does. It brings you back. I mean, that's 24, 5 years ago for me. And, you know, it does. You can just close your eyes and you're right back there, you know.
I think we could have a mini series out of the Lenita Erickson WCW story. I find it fascinating, and you've been very generous with your time here just to go into all of this. I think a lot of our listeners and viewers will really enjoy this chat. I also want to give you just a chance to mention what you're working on. I know some of your projects maybe you can't give too much information about that are going on with Mr. Brad Siegel, but I encourage everyone, they can go to lenitaerickson.com and many things that you have on the go.
Yes, I've got, that's my music page, which I'm not really active on it. I'm in the middle of doing a whole storybook album right now. Probably 23 songs, and we're going to do vinyl. And it's going to have basically a storybook, picture book. I run a big animal sanctuary. I've got like wolves and bobcats and horses and donkeys and pigs and sheep, chickens, birds, you know, everything's a rescue. So we're doing a whole series of that. And then as far as my TV stuff, they're not with Brad. The deal I did with Brad, he has a software, that he needed investing for. So, he called me up and he said, hey, can you put together? And so I did. And it's an interesting software. I don't think I'm able to talk about it yet because I don't think he's launched it yet. But I have, I work with Haymaker Media, Haymaker TV West, which used to be the head at Endemol True Entertainment. And we have a couple TV show projects that are in the works and in development right now. So that's just kind of it. Riding horses, staying filthy as I possibly can.
Sounds like a wonderful life, Lenita. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And if you ever want to do the follow-up with Brad on the other end, we'll make it happen.
Well, you know what? Don't tempt me. That would be hilarious. And by the way, I do want to tell you that when you first contacted me, I did reach out to Vice just to ask, you know, if they, you know, about you. And they spoke so highly of you.
Oh, did they? Okay. Well, yeah. I'm glad to hear. I was certainly, we've been reviewing like the recent episodes, and on the final one, we had a list of like the five people we would most like to hear on this series. And, all of us, thought of Lenita Erickson would have been a great, and I had no knowledge of, the fact yeah. that you had been interviewed by them. So I'm glad we could make this happen. Cause I think you're, if people have read Guy Evans' book, there's a whole chapter, dedicated to Lenita Erickson. And I think it gives you a real great view, and it's a much more complex story than just they cancel it. WWF swooped in. There was a lot more. And I think you could go a whole lot of episodes into just the sale process.
Yes, you're right. Well, I thank you very much. I appreciate it.